welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, May the 17th, 2022. On this edition of the Politocrat, President Biden goes to Buffalo, along with First Lady Dr. Jill Biden, to pay respects to the 10 people who were killed in the white male terrorist attack at Top Supermarket in Buffalo, New York on Saturday. President Biden gave a speech, and you'll hear that speech coming up, as well as my reaction to it. That's all coming up next. Dear listener, I hope you are well on this Tuesday. How are you? It's, well, one of those for me, windy day. Very windy day here in San Francisco, California. Sunny, but windy. But I am well. Thank you very much indeed for being here on the Politocrat Daily Podcast for this Tuesday. I do hope that you are making it through Tuesday the best way you can. And that if Tuesday has not gone well for you so far, I hope that the day improves for you, and I also hope that tomorrow is better than today for you. Well, we had President Biden today visiting Buffalo along with First Lady Dr. Jill Biden. They spent a few minutes this morning in Buffalo, New York first. Well, more than a few minutes, but first. They did spend a few minutes paying tribute to the 10 people who were brutally executed in a white male terrorist attack on black people at Top Supermarket in Buffalo. This is an attack, a terrorist attack that struck at the heart of this country and at the heart of people who were doing what any other person would do in this country on a Saturday or on the weekend in general or at any time, which is grocery shop. And some white man thought that it was in his purview to invade a community with violence, with his violence and his assault rifles. This is the legacy and the history of this country, that white men in particular have invaded the spaces and the towns and the communities of black people, of brown people, of Native Americans, of indigenous persons. That has been the legacy and the history of this country, a violent, bloody history, where white men just never mind their own business when it comes to this. These white men who do this never mind their business. And there are lots of other people who are in that category, who never mind their business when it comes to black people, brown people, Asian people, Native American people, indigenous persons. So with that in mind, what I've just said there, these last 30 seconds, President Biden and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden had a silent tribute at a site outside in Buffalo, New York, not far away from the Top Supermarket, where there was a tree that was festooned and adorned with balloons and with flowers and with, you know, nice messages and support for the surviving family members and all of that. Then you had other officials there, New York politicians, such as the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, the senator of New York, the senior and junior senators of New York, both, if I remember correctly, both of them were there. Both Chuck Schumer, the majority leader in the Senate, a Democrat, and Kirsten Gillibrand, the former presidential candidate, a Democrat, also out of New York, the junior senator. They were both there. And then you also had, in addition to that, the attorney general of New York State. That would be one Tish James, who was going to run for governor and decided not to. She wanted to pursue and continue her work as attorney general and wanted to continue her work, prosecuting and investigating the you-know-who family, that family that's a piece of garbage in New York that now resides mainly in Florida. So those were among the officials, and some clergy, I think, were there as well. By the way, where are the white clergy? I haven't seen the white clergy say anything yet. Have you? If you're a white person or a black person or anyone listening, have you heard anything from any white clergy members? Any established white clergy members? Have you heard anything from them? You know, I have not. Now, if you may have, but I would love to know. I've not seen anything about it in the news, and I've looked pretty damn hard. And this is the exact thing that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was saying about white clergy. So silent on the things that matter, but ready to criticize a black preacher, reverend, member of the clergy himself, when he or she stands up for themselves and stands up for black people's rights, stands up against government incursion, stands up against racism and militarism and poverty, and then these white clergy members are as silent as anything. Haven't heard a beat from a white clergy member yet. Not a single soul. But anywho, I can be corrected on that. I'll wait. Anywho, those were the among the people that led silent tributes today outdoors. Indoors, President Biden would then later go on to talk about what happened in Buffalo, New York. And as I said on an episode just yesterday here, I said that President Biden had to go full bore and be a la Harry Truman. Give him hell, Harry. That's what he had to be today. I'm going to play you the speech that President Biden made in Buffalo before family members of those who had been violently taken in this terrorist attack. Courtesy, or not just say courtesy, but at the hands of a white man who had actually perused and actually reconnoitered the place several times. He had been told not to come to Tops again. He was escorted out of the store the day before he committed this vicious, violent, terroristic attack. And he had been there in March of this year. He had been scoping out the store, had been there several times in March, according to police and according to news reports. This guy is not mentally ill. He had a very deliberate focus, particularly about this. He's a racist, and he's violent. Doesn't make him mentally ill, though. Doesn't make him mentally ill. Not when you are very, very careful at what you're doing, very deliberate about what you're doing. It makes him an evil human being without any redemption whatsoever. No capability of that. He has to be shown punishment and he has to feel it. Enough of me talking about that scumbag. It's now time for me to play you the speech that President Biden gave today. Before he gave that speech, there were a few words from First Lady Dr. Jill Biden. I'll play the speech right now, starting with Dr. Jill Biden's words. And then you'll hear from President Biden. And then on the other side of this speech, which I really do recommend you listen to, both of these speeches, First Lady Dr. Jill Biden's speech is rather short. But I want to play both of these speeches. And after these speeches, I'm going to come back. I'm going to take a break. And then I'm going to talk about my reaction, or just give you my reaction to what we have heard together. So it's about 15 to 20 minutes, roughly. I think it's about 20 minutes, I think. Close to 20 minutes in total. Maybe 15 in total. I don't remember exactly. So first you're going to hear Dr. Jill Biden, the First Lady of the United States. Then you're going to be hearing from President Joe Biden. This was their speech, both of their speeches today in Buffalo, New York, before family members of the 10 people who were executed by a white male terrorist.
Good before I begin, Jill would like to say a few words.
I just wanted to say thank you to the families for opening up your hearts to us and for letting us be with you today. So God bless you, and thank you for allowing us to be with you. Yeah.
Majority Leader Schumer and Senator Gillibrand and Congressman Higgins and Gov, thank you for taking my call when I called. And I'll never forget what she said. I said, I'd like to maybe come up if it's okay. She said, this is a big Scranton. Come. And you're doing a heck of a job. Thank you. Thank you for your heart as well as your head. And Mayor Brown, you've been wonderful. Thank you. And I know this is a lot of, when a vice presidential or a presidential chip shows up, there's all kinds of paraphernalia and people. And I know it's not easy. I want to thank your law enforcement officers for not just what they did in this crisis, but for accommodating us and all the elected officials and law enforcement officers, first responders, and faith leaders that are here today. Jill and I have come to stand with you. And to the families, we've come to grieve with you. It's not the same, but we know a little bit what it's like to lose a piece of your soul. When you lose a son, a daughter, a husband, a wife, a mother, a father. The feeling of having that, as I said to some of you when we talked privately, you feel like there's a black hole in your chest you're being sucked into, and you're suffocating, unable to breathe. That's what it felt like, at least to us. And I'm sure some version of that feels that way to you. The anger, the pain, the depth of a loss that's so profound. You know, we know it's hard to believe, and you're probably not going to believe it, but I can tell you now, from our personal experience and many others who we've met, the day's going to come. It will come. When your loved one brings a smile as you remember him or her, it's going to bring a smile to your lip before it brings a tear to your eye. It takes a while for that to happen. It takes a while. It might take more than a season. But our prayer for you is that that time comes sooner or later, but I promise you it will come. As a nation, I say to the families, we remember them. We've been reading about them. We visited a memorial where to show the love for them, and you've all shown by the supermarket. And Celestine Cheney, 65 years old, brain cancer survivor, churchgoer, bingo player, went to buy strawberries to make her favorite shortcake. A loving mother and a grandmother. Roberta Drury, 32, beloved daughter and sister, moved back home to help take care of her brother after his bone marrow transplant. She went to buy groceries for dinner, the center of attention who made everyone in the room laugh and smile when she walked in. Andre McNeil, 53, worked at a restaurant, went to buy his three-year-old son a birthday cake. His son selling a birthday, asking where's daddy. Catherine Massey, 72, a writer and an advocate, who dressed up in costumes at schools and cut the grass in the park and helped in local elections, the glue of the family and the community. Marcus Morrison, 52, school bus aide, went to buy snacks for a weekly movie night with the family, survived by his wife and three children and a stepdaughter, the center of their world. Hayward Patterson, 67, father, church deacon, fed the homeless at the soup kitchen, gave rides at the grocery store to neighbors who needed help, putting food in the trunk of others when he took his final breath. Aaron Salter, 55, retired Buffalo police officer for three decades. Loved electric cars, hero who gave his life to save others on a Saturday afternoon. And had that man not been wearing that vest that he purchased, bulletproof vest, a lot of lives would have been saved. A beloved father and husband. Geraldine Talley, 62, expert banker and known for her warm, gentle personality, a friend to everybody, devoted mother and grandmother. Ruth Whitfield, 88, beloved wife, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, sang in the church choir, a caretaker of her husband, bringing him clean clothes, cutting his hair, holding his hand every day she visited him in the nursing home. Heart as big as her head. Pearl Young, 77, a mother, grandmother, missionary of God, public school teacher, who also ran the local food pantry. Loved singing, dancing, and her family. And all three are injured. Zaire Goodman, 20, shot in the neck, but fighting through it. Jennifer Warrington, 50, Christopher Braden, 55, both treated with injuries on a long road to recovery. Individual lives of love, service, and community. It speaks to the bigger story of who we are as Americans. A great nation, because we're good people. Jill and I bring you this message from deep in our nation's soul. In America, evil will not win, I promise you. Hate will not prevail. And white supremacy will not have the last word. For the evil did come to Buffalo. It's come to all too many places. Manifesting gunmen who massacred innocent people in the name of hateful and perverse ideology rooted in fear and racism. It's taken so much. 10 lives cut short in a grocery store. Three other wounded by a hate-filled individual who had driven 200 miles from Binghamton and that range to carry out a murderous, racist rampage that he would live stream to the world. What happened here is simple and straightforward. Terrorism, domestic terrorism, violence inflicted in the service of hate, and the vicious thirst for power that defines one group of people being inherently inferior to any other group. A hate that through the media and politics, the internet, has radicalized angry, alienated, lost, and isolated individuals into falsely believing that they will be replaced, that's the word, replaced by the other, by people who don't look like them, and who are, therefore, in a perverse ideology that they possess and being fed lesser beings. I and all of you reject the lie. I call on all Americans to reject the lie. And I condemn those who spread the lie for power, political gain, and for profit. That's what it is. We've now seen too many times the deadly and destructive violence this ideology unleashes. We heard the chants, "You will not replace us," in Charlottesville, Virginia. I wasn't going to run, as the senator knows, again for president. When I saw those people coming out of the woods or the fields in Virginia, in Charlottesville, carrying torches, shouting, "You will not replace us," accompanied by white supremacists and carrying Nazi banners. That's when I said, no, no. And I, honest to God, those who know me, Chuck, you know, I wasn't going to run for certain. But I was going to be darned if I was going to let, anyway. I'm going to get going. Look, we've seen the mass shootings in Charleston, South Carolina, El Paso, Texas, and Pittsburgh. Last year in Atlanta, this week in Dallas, Texas, and now in Buffalo, New York. White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison running through. It really is. running through our body politic. And it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more. I mean, no more. We need to say as clearly and forcefully as we can that the ideology of white supremacy has no place in America. None. And look, failure for us to not say that, failure in saying that, is going to be complicity. Silence is complicity. It's complicity. We cannot remain silent. Our nation's strength has always come from the idea. It's going to sound corny, but think about it. What's the idea of our nation? That we're all children of God. All life, liberty, our universal goods, gifts of God. We didn't get it from a government. We got it from because we exist. We're called upon to defend them. The venom of the haters and their weapons of war, the violence and the words and deeds of that stalk our streets, our stores, our schools. This venom, this violence cannot be the story of our time. We cannot allow that to happen. Look, I'm not naive. I know tragedy will come again. It cannot be forever overcome. It cannot be fully understood either. But there are certain things we can do. We can keep assault weapons off our streets. We've done it before. I did it when we passed the crime bill last time. And violence went down. Shootings went down. You can't prevent people from being radicalized to violence. But we can address the relentless exploitation of the internet to recruit and mobilize terrorism. We just need to have the courage to do that, to stand up. Look, the American experiment in democracy is in a danger like it hasn't been in my lifetime. It's in danger this hour. Hate and fear are being given too much oxygen by those who pretend to love America, but who don't understand America. To confront the ideology of hate requires caring about all people, not making distinctions. Reverend, the scripture is seeing that we're all part of the divine. Love thy neighbor as thyself. That's the America I know, that Jill knows. And most deserve the most. Look, we're the most multiracial, most dynamic nation in the history of the world. Now's the time for the people of all races, from every background, to speak up as a majority in America and reject white supremacy. These actions we've seen in these hate-filled attacks represent the views of a hate-filled minority. We can't allow them to distort America, the real America. We can't allow them to destroy the soul of the nation. As President of the United States, I travel the world all the time. And other nations ask me, heads of state in other countries, ask me, what's going on? What in God's name happened on January 6th? What happened in Buffalo? They'll ask. We have to refuse to live in a country where black people going about a weekly grocery shopping can be gunned down by weapons of war deployed in a racist cause. We have to refuse to live in a country where fear and lies are packaged for power and for profit. We must all enlist in this great cause of America. This is work that requires all of us, presidents, politicians, commentators, citizens. None of us can stay in the sidelines. We have to resolve that here in Buffalo, that from the tragedy, this tragedy will come hope and light and life. It has to. And that on our watch, the sacred cause of America will never bow, never break, never bend. And the American we love, the one we love, will endure. So to the families, from your pain, may we find purpose to live life worthy of the loved ones you lost. From a hymn based on the 91st Psalm that's sung in my church, May he raise you up on eagle's wings and bear you on the breath of dawn, make you to shine like the sun, and hold you in the palm of his hand. That's my wish for us. We can do this if we resolve to do it, if we take on the haters and those who don't even care. It's just about profit and politics. May the soul of the fallen rest in peace and rise in glory. And may God guide the United States of America now and always. To the families, my grandpa used to say when I walked out of his home in Scranton, he'd say, Joey, spread the faith. And my grandma would yell, no, Joey. I mean, he'd say, keep the faith. And my grandma would say, no, Joey, spread the faith. We're thinking of you. Hold on to each other tightly. Stick together. You'll get through this. And we'll make Buffalo and the United States a better place to live than it is today.
So you've just heard the nearly 17 minutes that both First Lady Dr. Jill Biden and her husband, President Joe Biden, gave in a speech today, in their speeches today, before a packed crowd in Buffalo, New York. You just heard that. You've just heard the last nearly 17 minutes of them in their entirety. What did you think of the speeches? What did you think of the speeches? I am going to take a break, dear listener, and I'm going to come back. And when I do, I'm going to tell you what I thought of the speeches, specifically what I thought of President Biden's speech, because First Lady Dr. Jill Biden really gave a very, very brief thank you to the families, which I thought was really nice, and I thought was very classy of her and very kind of her and very loving of her to do. When I come back, my response to President Joe Biden's speech. A windy day it is here in San Francisco, California on this Tuesday. The sun shines brightly. The temperature is, well, not too bad here today, around 67 degrees. That's nice for this time of year in San Francisco, California. It's nice. And the wind a little bit up there. You know, the wind gusts a little bit today. And I hope that you're well. I hope the weather has been good where you are, dear listener. And I hope that everything is working in your favor on this Tuesday, or whenever you choose to be listening to this particular episode of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. You are always welcome here to listen and to respond and to give your views. And you can do that, by the way, at politocratpod@gmail.com. That's the email address, politocratpod@gmail.com. That would be the place to register your opinion and views on any of the things I speak about, or any comments that you have to make, anything at all. Of course, anything that's rude or hateful will instantly be banished. So just want to let you know that. There was nothing hateful about what President Biden had to say in his speech that you just heard just before the break. But I think the speech fell woefully short. President Biden, as I said yesterday here, had to come in with I was going to almost say all guns blazing, but that really is not appropriate now, is it? But I think President Biden had to come in the way that he did 2 months ago when, in Warsaw, Poland, on a Saturday night, he made it very clear, speaking there, how much he wanted the terrorism and the barbarism and the genocide to end that was being done by Vladimir Putin, the dictator of Russia, toward the people of Ukraine with this unjust war and the war crimes that he's committing. President Biden was unequivocal on that night. unequivocal, as he should be, as any leader should be when there's genocides anywhere on this planet. And I mean, what's going on in the only country in the world is genocide, by the way. That is absolutely, I would absolutely put it right where it is. And it also is war crimes, human rights violations. And I said to you yesterday, if you listened to the episode yesterday, dear listener, that President Biden, actually it wasn't today, I think it was Sunday's episode. Gosh, it's so many episodes that I do. I do these things every day. So whatever day it was, I think it was Sunday. I'm pretty sure it was Sunday's episode, not yesterday's. Sunday's episode of this particular podcast that you're now listening to, I made it very clear that on Tuesday, President Biden had to really put the pedal to the metal. He really did. Pedal to the metal. To the metal. He did. He just had to. He had to sound like Harry Truman or FDR in terms of their unabashed scorn of the Republican Party, which, by the way, has a lot to do with this white domestic racist terrorist scumbag. And also to do with a number of other entities and, of course, the DNA of the society. President Biden had to speak to those things. And in that 15 and a half, 16 minutes, because as I said, First Lady Dr. Biden did not speak for very long. You heard nothing from President Biden that led you to believe that he really did want to do something about white terrorism in the United States. And I'll tell you why you heard nothing, or I'll tell you why I say that. If you are going back to 2015 and no earlier than that to start talking about the white terrorism that has been waged against black people and this anti-black racism and this anti-black violence and this anti-black terrorism, if you're going back to only 2015 in the United States and to start at that point to talk about this, you definitely have no clue. And you are also someone who is not willing to want to have a clue about just how deep this goes and just how forceful a response must be to it. 72 hours ago, man, you just had 10 people slaughtered at a top supermarket. Yet 72 hours ago. People haven't been buried yet. And President Biden, the best he could do is say that white supremacy is a poison. Can you tell us something, Mr. President, that we do not already know? And by the way, it's a whole lot worse than a poison. And that speech to me just lacked any sense of definition. It didn't have any specifics about what the federal government can do or will do about this. There was no attempt to tie systems to this. White supremacy isn't something that just floats in the ether. It is systemic. It is what upholds the racist institutions in this country. It is a doctrine of power, first and foremost, about white people maintaining power and control. That's what white supremacy is. And I hate to use the word supremacy because there's nothing supreme about what these people are doing to us, to you and I. Nothing supreme about it. It's barbarism. It's genocide. It's inhumanity. That's what those things are. There's nothing supreme about this. Then there's nothing at all about what President Biden is going to do, whether it's via executive order, whether it's via anything to do with federal law, whether it's anything to do with the Justice Department and Merrick Garland, and also, by the way, the Civil Rights Division Assistant Attorney General, or the lead attorney general, or the lead attorney, the lead of the Civil Rights Division of the Attorney General's office, Kristen Clark, nothing about what she can do, no mention of it, no mention of anything to do with the political responsibilities and having the political and moral will to do it. No, nothing, nothing at all. You could have given that same speech to a bunch of school kids in Buffalo, much less to an audience, some of whom are family members of those who were massacred on Saturday. In fact, you know what? I'm going to save you my criticism. I'm actually going to come back on the other side of this break, and I'm going to give you the speech that President Biden should have gave, but did not give. I am going to give you the speech that President Biden should have given, but did not give. I'm going to just forget. Look, I can go on about the criticism for the rest of this, God knows how long. I'm going to give you the speech. And this is all from the top of my head. I've got no written notes. This is all extemporaneous. I'm going to give you the speech that President Biden did not give you today. What you did not hear in those 16 and a half minutes. I'm going to give you the exact speech that President Biden should have given. I'll do that right after this. To the families of the 10 people who are no longer here with us, to the First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, to the Governor of New York, to the senior and junior senators of New York, and to all the distinguished officials and guests, and to all of you, thank you very much indeed for having me here, and Jill here as well. Really appreciated your kindness in welcoming us here. And I know that I wanted to come here today to pay tribute to the family members who have fallen, who were brutally and cowardly executed by a white male terrorist who must be punished and dealt with in the most severe way. I know what loss is like. I know what grief is like. And while the grief that I've had in my life is not like what you're feeling now in the same circumstances, I must tell you that I am heartbroken for your loss, and I am so sorry. And my heartfelt condolences go to you in this moment. There will be really, really difficult days and years ahead. And I am so very sorry that you have had this happen to you. Buffalo is a community that loves. Buffalo is a community that believes in one another. And whether it's Buffalo, whether it's Charleston, whether it's El Paso, whether it's Las Vegas, whether it's Pittsburgh, whether it's anywhere else on these shores here in the United States of America, this violence and this terrorism by white men must stop and must stop now. And for it to stop, we are going to have to do several things. One, we are going to have to punish domestic terrorism and especially hate crime domestic terrorism to the maximum extent of the law. Today I announced that I am going to issue an executive order on domestic terrorism and enforce strict penalties on a federal level for violence against classes of people, any people, but particularly protected classes traditionally. And that includes black people. That includes anyone who has historically been a target of violence in American society. That means Native Americans, that means Asian Americans, that means Latinos, that means indigenous persons, Native Americans. I'm going to sign that as soon as I get back to the White House. I am also going to instruct the Attorney General of these United States to immediately investigate any outstanding hate crimes, domestic terrorism, and make that the top of his priority, of his to-do list. I am going to have the Attorney General report back to me every 30 days with what is going on and how things are going, and I'm going to make an address to the nation at particular points during the remainder of this year and the remainder of this first term in office to give you, the American people, an update of just how rigorously we are fighting against hatred, against domestic terrorism, and against white male terrorism that is domestic in this country. We cannot afford to keep doing very little about this. Too many black lives are being taken. Too many black lives are being taken. I want to send a clear message to every terrorist out here, every white male terrorist out here, is that with this administration in the White House, you are going to meet your match. You have met your match with this administration. We are going to crack down on you. And we're going to crack down on you like never before. You haven't seen anything yet. We are going to rigorously, aggressively prosecute anybody who does these heinous, violent things to black people or any other group in this country. Rest assured, you will have no hiding place. We are going to smoke you out of your cave, out of your hole. And we're going to make sure that you spend the rest of your life in a hole, in solitary confinement, or maybe in general population. That is what this administration is going to do. We are also going to push in the United States Senate and the House a hate crimes domestic terrorism bill. This is the moment where we must act. And I, as your president, am going to act. The time for talk is over. The time for the rhetoric is over. We must have the moral will and the political imperative to do this. I am going to announce, and I'm announcing right here, right now, here in Buffalo, to the people of this loving community, that I am going to be pushing for a hate crimes bill, a universal one, but particularly targeted to terrorist attacks on these shores against Black people, against brown people, against Native Americans, against Asian Americans, against the indigenous communities, against the LGBTQIA, any attack like that, whether it's at the Pulse nightclub, whether it's at any of these places, Mother Emanuel AME Church, as I mentioned earlier, in Charleston, South Carolina, any of these places, you can expect that the long arm of the Justice Department is coming after you. This is the time for the House of Representatives, and this is the time for the United States Senate to pass a hate crimes domestic terrorism bill, an anti-Black terrorism bill. The time is now. The people demand it. The community of Buffalo definitely needs this protection. And we must continue to keep pressing for this legislation. And I am going to be speaking to members of Congress as soon as I get back to the White House. I'm going to be speaking to members of the United States Senate. And I am going to have meetings with these individuals, and we are going to get something done here, because what we do not need is another Buffalo. We do not need another Mother Emanuel AME Church. We do not need another Tree of Life Synagogue happening. We do not need these brutal terrorist acts. We must root out these white murderers. We must root out these hate-filled, anti-Black terrorist attacks. We must root out white male terrorism. It is the number one enemy that we have in this country. It endangers our country. And we must do everything we can to defeat it. It is public enemy number one. And my administration is going to stand up and stand tall and shut down this cowardly violence. The next thing I want to talk about to you today is something that we all must face in our country. Too many of us have failed to look in the mirror at the country. We celebrate July 4th. Every year, but we don't look in the mirror at how July 4th was in the first place when it first happened in 1776. People were celebrating independence. White men, rich white male property owners, were celebrating independence. They were the only ones celebrating. Everyone else was being either subjugated, enslaved, or not heard from. And enslavement was going on here in the United States. Enslavement of Black people by white males had been going on all throughout this time and before then. And we as a country have to start looking in the mirror at the history of this country and the DNA of this country, which has been white male terrorism and violence against Native Americans, against Black people. That is the foundation of where this country was built and which it stands. And until we start to look at that as people and start to open our eyes to it and learn it and understand that the history is and was, and understand that so many things today are here because black people built them, and are here today because Native Americans were genocided. We are never going to grow as a country. This isn't only about Buffalo. This is about all of us. Because this terrorist attack struck at the heart of this country. Buffalo is the heart of this country. Pittsburgh is the heart of this country. New Orleans is the heart of this country. San Francisco is the heart of this country. Iowa is the heart of this country. New York is the heart of this country. Florida is the heart of this country. Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, every one of these states, the whole 50 states, are all the heart of this country. And this attack on people in Buffalo was an attack on all of us. It was an attack on the United States of America. And as long as someone attacks this country, you can bet that this administration will absolutely come down on you like a ton of bricks. We are engaged in a war, ladies and gentlemen. We are engaged in a war. And these white male domestic terrorists have declared war on the United States of America. That means they have declared war on you. And you. And you. And you. And on all of us. And it's going to take all of us to stand up and root out this violent domestic terrorism, this violence and this white male terrorism. We are all going to have to stand up against it. And to those of you who are white, who are watching and listening to me at this moment, you have an extra special responsibility. The people that are doing this to black people, the people who are doing this to Asian people, the people who are doing this to Jewish people, to LGBTQIA persons, to Latinos, are overwhelmingly white men. Overwhelmingly white men. In Las Vegas, it was a white man. In Pittsburgh, it was a white man. In Charleston, South Carolina, it was a white man. In Buffalo, here you know it was a white man. In nearly all of these mass killings, these acts of domestic terroristic violence, they are all at the hands, almost all of them at the hands of white men. And so to the white community of the United States, I want to express to you the utmost urgency and imperative that you challenge and confront people in your family and in your friendship circle who think and actually verbalize their hatred toward other groups of people who are black or brown or Asian or members of the LGBTQIA communities, you have to confront their hatred. And I know you may find that difficult to do, but it's far more difficult to be one of these families in this room who've just lost their loved one to the violence at the hands of a white male terrorist. You have to do what is right. And Dr. Martin Luther King always said that the time is always right to do right. And this is that time, ladies and gentlemen. This is that time. You must, if you are white, confront the white people in your family, in your inner circle, in your friendships, who expresses hatred towards other groups of people. You must confront racism and racists, and you must become an anti-racist. That is my charge to you today, to become an anti-racist, to call this behavior out proactively, to condemn it, to remove yourself away from racist people, to make it clear to them that they are not welcome in your circle. Now, I want to talk about something here today, ladies and gentlemen, There was a man just a few days ago, just one day before this horrible attack on your community happened. There was a white man driving a Lyft car somewhere in the country. I don't remember where. But he is an example of what I have just talked about. He was a white man. He was driving a Lyft vehicle and a white woman walked into the vehicle, came into the vehicle and seemed to be surprised that he was white. The camera was rolling inside the vehicle, recording everything that happened. And the driver turned around and said, "What?" And then the white woman in the back said, "Well, you know, I'm surprised. You speak English. You seem like a nice guy. You're an actual regular guy, ordinary guy." And that white driver said, "What do you mean? That's offensive. So if I wasn't a white person, what would the difference be?" And that driver told his white passenger to get out of the vehicle. The white driver, a male driver, said to the white woman, "Get out of the vehicle. I'm not carrying you. I'm not taking you to your destination." And then the other person who was with her, presumably her husband or boyfriend, started to get angry, started to curse, used racist epithets, and threatened to punch the white male driver in the face. That kind of violence and those kinds of threats are never acceptable in this country. That level of violence and that anger and that hatred are never acceptable. And in this administration, it's never going to be accepted ever. Those two people were ejected from his car and he kept going. And they own a business, and that business now has basically had to shut down. This is how you have to fight back against hatred and racism, especially against anti-black racism. This whole country is built on it, and institutions are built on it. And we as politicians, and this is where I am coming in here, we have to challenge this as well. We must regain the moral high ground in this country. We must call out white domestic terrorism wherever it happens. It is the number one enemy to this country. And if we want to continue to be a country, we are going to have to band together and fight back as a unified force against this heinous, cowardly, dangerous violence. This reckless and disgusting an immoral act of depravity and cruelty and murder must be ended immediately. And it will take all of us to fight it. And we cannot just sit here and mealy-mouth what's going on. We have to get serious about this because these terrorists are getting very serious. You see all of these killings happening. And we also must stand up and stand strong. And we have to continue to fight against the proliferation of guns in our nation. We have to continue to fight that with every fiber of our being. And I promise you, for as long as I'm in the White House, that is exactly what we will do. I want to say another thing here. Our institutions are part and parcel of this white domestic terrorist violence. The institutions like Fox News, the social media platforms, and I'm not going to name them. You know the social media platforms that engage in this. You know about the social media platforms that allow these videos. You know about these social media platforms who don't properly regulate when white people say racist things. But then when a black person speaks their mind and says what's on their heart, they are instantly suspended in a lot of these cases. We are going to have to fight back against the negative influence of social media. It is dangerous. There must be regulation of social media in this country. It is a health hazard, and we have every obligation and every responsibility to make sure that social media is regulated in this country. We must regain the moral and political high ground, and we cannot walk away from our responsibilities. We mustn't ever walk away from them. There's 10 families here who are going to be living with this for the rest of their lives. And we owe them. We owe them every day of our lives to end this hatred in this country and this racism in this country. And these institutions that profit off of it, that have been built on the backs of it, on the backs of hate and on the backs of black people. We are more than obligated to redress this horrible history. And we must do it by looking in the mirror at ourselves and educating ourselves. And for white people, you must become anti-racists. It is not enough for you to say that you are not a racist. You have to be an anti-racist. And you must call this racism out. Even if it's a member of your own family, you have to. Even if it's one of your friends that you're so close to, you must. Even if it's someone who might be your spouse. This is the heavy lifting that white people have to do in this country. And it has to start now, today. I don't want any more Buffaloes. I don't want any more Pittsburghs or Charlestons or Las Vegases. I don't want any more Buffaloes. I don't want any more of this. We must act and we will act. Make no mistake about it. This country will only survive if we come together and we face the truth about the horrid violence and the history of this country. We must start to look at ourselves in the mirror and we must reject the hateful things about our history. In order to move forward, we must look at reparations and not just look at it, we must give reparations to descendants of black people. Ancestors, we must. We've got to start moving toward a better society, and we cannot kid ourselves anymore. We are going to have to open up the wounds, and we're going to have to repair our soul. And the best way we can do that is by beginning a process of reparations. That is what we must do. We've given this to several groups, the Japanese Americans. We've given this to Jewish Americans. We've given this to numbers of groups who have gone through extreme, extreme, painful, deeply horrific chapters of history. And we have to do this for black people in the United States of America. This is my pledge to you, Buffalo. I promise you, as your president, I will do everything in my power to make sure that this doesn't happen ever again. And if it does, there will be stiff consequences. And I say again to my fellow Americans everywhere, we all have an obligation to stamp out hate, to call it out, and make it very uncomfortable for those who think that they can spew that hate. That Lyft driver just a few days ago was an example of what I'm talking about. And we need to continue to have white people who behave like he did last Friday. To the families, I want to make sure that I do everything in my power to help ease some of the pain. Now, I can't promise everything, of course, in terms of easing your pain. No pain will go away when it comes to the pain of losing a loved one to gun violence. And we must do so much more about combating gun violence and about these gun lobbies in this country. We must do that. The Senate must grow and get a political will and a moral imperative. We must keep fighting. I promise you, here in Buffalo, I am going to do all I can to help ease just a little of your pain. And I know that I may fall short, but I am going to give everything to this for the rest of my time in the White House. You have my word on this. To every family member who lost a loved one, I am so deeply sorry. And your pain is more than I can bear, because I cannot know what it is like. I don't know what it's like. Not in this instance, not to gun violence and hatred. And I promise you, we will make sure that this terrorist, this white terrorist, is punished and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. We must start recognizing that white racism must be extinguished from this earth. And racism of any form will never be condoned here in the United States, not by me or anyone else. And any institution that practices it is going to hear from this administration. You are on notice today that if you continue or even try to start doing these anti-black and hateful things, you are going to be punished. Mark my words. May God bless the United States of America, and may God bless and protect these Buffalo families. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. See, that's all you had to say, Mr. President. That's all you had to say. You just heard the last, what, nearly half an hour? That's all you had to say, Mr. President. And that's what you should have said today. Now, I didn't even really mention the Republicans and all of that, did I? Of course the Republicans have a lot to do with all of this. And certainly they are chief among those fomenting all this hatred. They are at the top of it all. Look at what happened in the domestic terrorist attack just last year. I didn't even mention January 6, 2021 either in my speech, as I pretended to be President Biden for just half an hour. Well, you can be the judge and jury of that. But what I was saying there is what President Biden should have said today. I would have been very happy to have heard that. But, you know, in some ways, though, dear listener, I'm not really surprised that President Biden didn't meet that moment. He hasn't met the moment in a number of areas, but look, overall, President Biden has performed well, I think. Given everything, I think he's done well. But where I'm concerned as a black person, he is not. And I am not looking at the appointment of the first black female Supreme Court justice as progress. That's progress for one person. That is not progress for the vast black communities all over this country. That's one black individual. Let's never, ever mistake progress in one black individual as progress for all black individuals, for the 40 million of us that there are here in the United States. Let's not mix those two up or somehow conflate them. There really won't be true progress, dear listener, until all of us as black people have received what is rightfully ours. That's what a modicum of progress would be. But President Biden has fallen short in some areas as it pertains to black people. Build Back Better would have helped a lot of black families. That didn't pass. Now, that wasn't his fault. Now you can't even hear that word. You can't even hear those three words anymore in Washington, as if they are three dirty words or something. Now they try to call it something else. Why do Democrats kowtow and change their labeling as milquetoast as it already is when something doesn't work out? These Republicans don't do that. They just keep sticking at their hateful agenda. But because President Biden wants to be liked, oh, so liked by everybody across the aisle, he won't say boo about the Republicans. He won't be severe enough against them. President Obama wasn't either. He was so genuflecting to the Republicans. So much so that they insulted him. They spat in his face metaphorically. He had one of them on the floor during the joint session of Congress when he called out President Obama and then said that, "You lie, you lie." And fundraised millions of dollars off of that. That was Joe Wilson in South Carolina, the Republican. He's still in office. I mean, that's the contempt that the Republicans show President Obama. That's the contempt. That's the respect, in quotes, that they show him. They didn't respect him. They hated him. Hated President Clinton as well. And the Democrats just so mealy-mouthed. And that was Joe Biden again today. Mealy-mouthed. When the occasion called for more. Garnell Whitfield, who was the former Buffalo Fire Commissioner, appeared on Roland Martin Unfiltered earlier, and he was not happy with President Biden, at least specifically regarding whether or not there should have been some kind of actual action taken as a result of this terrorist attack. He wasn't happy that President Biden failed to speak on that. And I'm telling you, there are a lot of people aren't happy with it. It was a very polite speech that was designed to be consoling, but also very empty as a speech politically. It was a very empty speech on a political level. Yes, it was the consoling and this and that, but that's what any president does, or at least most presidents do. But what was missing in that speech was action. You can't just give lip service to saying that white supremacy is poison and then not connect it to the institutions that it comes from. That's just cowardly. That is a cowardly act by President Biden not to link those things together. And he knows better. He just doesn't want to ruffle feathers. And you can't afford to not want to ruffle feathers when 10 black people have been executed by a white male terrorist. You can't sit there mealy-mouthed. What is the plan of action? I know we have an Emmett Till anti-lynching bill that is now law, but what about having an anti-terrorist act regarding domestic terrorism and anti-black violence? How about that? That should be something that we already have and we don't. President Biden's been around the Senate for so long, he should have been much more forceful today. And I'm profoundly disappointed. Not surprised, though, because President Biden will do this. He will let you down. And we are the most loyal voting base that he has. And he really doesn't want to be doing that, especially this year with these midterms. And by the way, there are midterm primary elections that are going on right now. I will have the results on those tomorrow. I would have done that today. But because of what had happened on Saturday and the president and the first lady, Dr. Jill Biden, being in Buffalo today and their remarks there, I would have to postpone that to tomorrow. And there's a couple other things I wanted to talk about in this episode, but I'm going to postpone them as well. So those are some of the things that I would have said. You heard it in that speech that I gave. And some of the things I just mentioned now, that President Biden fell way short on today. Now, in yesterday's episode, I had paid tribute to 10 people, the 10 people who were killed. Now, one of them was Andre McNeil, and I didn't give a specific tribute to him, only because at the time I did the episode, I had not seen any write-up on Andre McNeil and any tributes to him. So as a result, I did not have one for him. So that's my apology. And he was 53 years of age, and I do sincerely hope that he rests in power. My condolences to his family as well. I wonder how the rest of these family members thought as they watched or listened to President Biden today. I wonder how they felt. I don't know that they could have been very happy. I'm sure they were comforted to see him there, that he at least gave them a visit, paid his respects. But I think that that speech needed to be much more forceful. And quite frankly, in terms of the kind of urgency in the speech, there was none. And I really wish that President Biden did a separate address in the Oval Office to the entire country. That's what he should have done. I would have loved to have seen that as well. He should have done that too. Because maybe there is a time and a place to be a bit more on the soothing side, but you can do both. In the same speech, you can do both. But President Biden didn't do enough of what I did in the speech I just gave, which you can, of course, listen back to. I might need to polish up a few oratory skills, but other than that, the substance of what I said is very much the thing you should be focusing on. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.